Thank you. apologize. have a couple of them.
קודם כל אנחנו רוצים לברך את גורי ג'אן טובו. ברוכים הבאים לכולם, גם לילדים. We want to welcome Guru Jan Prabhu. He is a very old disciple of Srila Prabhupada.
I'm feeling it every day. My knees, my back.
He's a scholar who wrote so many books about Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. And
he's very lucky to be here.
And we are very lucky that he's come here every year to bless us. So, Hare Krishna.
The Ram's going to have to set this up.
Yeah.
Excuse me, while I do.
These microphones.
Too loud?
Higher, a little higher.
These microphones are very practical until you cough. I would like to do something a little extraordinary, different than what I usually would do. Usually I'll just speak and speak and speak. But this time, what I would like to do is we'll all listen to Prabhupada speak, who was my teacher, and who was the one who started spread Krishna consciousness of the chanting Hare Krishna all over the world. Now, because his accent is sometimes difficult to understand. Should I turn it on?
Yes.
Okay. See what happens. See if technology will come through. It has an effect that everyone's mind goes here, even though it's only three birds. And no signal. It's going to be hard for you to see, I think. The neck, it will hurt by the end. Why don't you sit over here? I think that's more practical. Otherwise, you won't be able to see. All those who are over here or behind the pillar are going to have a problem. Click here to enable face recognition. Nah. Let's see if we can. Okay. But I'm going to need this over here, otherwise I won't be able to see without looking behind me. Okay. Now the first thing we see here, this is a photograph, obviously. This is a photograph that I took by Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan. But the photograph is not the subject of what I'm going to speak about, or Prabhupada's going to speak about. But because we're all looking at it, I might as well mention it.
Looks like a letter in Sanskrit.
What letter?
Gosh.
I have to ask a scholar. Okay. So what Prabhupada is going to speak about, this is from an excerpt, a part of a lecture that he gave in Mumbai, perhaps in the early 70s. And he was speaking to a group of devotees, followers, and congregation members who are all Indian. And he quotes a lot of Sanskrit. And he's going to speak about one verse from the Bhagavad Gita that we shall see in a moment. Now, the whole segment is approximately 15 minutes long. But what I've done is broken it down into small pieces of 1 minute or 2 minutes. And there's 11 segments altogether. Some of them are quite short. So what we're going to do is listen to what Prabhupada says and at the same time read the transcription, the words that he says, and then what we'll do is speak about it, and then we'll go over the words, we'll read it again, and we'll speak about it. Now, what Prabhupada is going to be speaking about is the situation of every soul, every person within this world. And that situation is that we are eternal, in fact. We are eternal. We are all eternal souls. But we are within a body. Each of us obviously have our own body. But there was a time when the eldest of us in the room, that's probably us two, we were very young, and we had young bodies as young as the youngest in the room, and there's quite a few of them in the back. Yes, this is hard to believe, but I was once like that. Really, it's true. And then I grew to that age. How old are you now? And then, once I was, how old are you this year? You used to be young. But, and it keeps getting worse after that. But the idea is, the simple idea is that I was always that same person, regardless of the body that I was in. I have been the same person. I always felt that it was me. I actually remember one of my earliest memories, which is when I was in the second grade, which means I was 7 years old. Is there anyone 7 years old? Lindy? No. How old is Satya? She's old, much older. Okay. But I remember we were playing in school, and there was a group of myself and my friends, and there was a sand playing like in a sandbox, and we were building things. And I remember being the one who was like telling everyone what to do, but the teacher didn't know that it was me who was like telling everyone what to do. And I was conscious at that time that I was sort of manipulating everyone. But the teacher didn't know about it. I wasn't doing anything cruel, but I was organizing my friends, but the teacher wasn't aware of that. So I remember distinctly that occurrence. And it was me. It was me, the same person. But my body now has changed in so many ways. And now I'm not seven anymore. I don't have a seven-year-old body, and I don't have a 10-year-old body, or a 15-year-old body, or an 18-year-old body, or a 20, or 25, or 30, or 40, or 50, or 60, or 65-year-old body. But in every stage,
in every age, that was me. But we usually think, who am I? I think of this as me. But if I am this body, then who was, if I'm my body, which body was I? The 5-year-old, the 7-year-old, the 10-year-old, the 15-year-old, the 18-year-old, the 30-year-old, the 40, 50. So Prabhupada is going to speak, and the principle that he's speaking about is that here we are in the material world, in this body. Now what to do about it? So let's see if all goes well. Let's see. First thing is we'll have to start it. We will say goodbye to our picture of Govardhana Hill in Vrindavan. And there we have the blue screen. Now, someone has to, in case that we don't, because we're going to hear Prabhupada's voice, and the sound, I don't know if it's going to be high or low, so someone has to be ready to turn it lower. Okay. Or higher. Okay. Yes, it works so far. So this particular little lecture that Prabhupada gave, why it intrigued me, why it interested me, was because he had 15 minutes, and at the end, we don't hear him saying it here, but at the end, in the original, that I cut out parts, the original, he says, now I have to go. I have to leave. I have another appointment, because Prabhupada was very busy going sometimes from one place to the next. So he had only 15 minutes to speak. And he was carrying an ocean of Krishna conscious philosophy and experience. So what is he going to speak about, and what is he going to say? What is he going to communicate to these people who are sitting there in just 15 minutes? Because Prabhupada could speak for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, because he was full. But what is he going to say in summarizing Krishna consciousness in just 15 minutes? So we'll find out. Now, because I can't help it, because I'm a teacher, so at the end of every section, there's 11 sections, we're going to have an examination. How does it feel, Avrum, to be back in school again? No, but don't worry. I'll just ask a simple question, and some of it is very short, the segments, but I'll ask a simple question. Well, there's a few questions we could ask. One is, what do you remember? Which is a very difficult question to answer, usually, because usually our minds are all over the universe, wandering. But I'll ask that question, what do you remember? And also another question, what struck you, perhaps? What did anything that Prabhupada say really seem especially meaningful for you? And the third question is, what is the essence of what Prabhupada was saying? So we maybe not ask all the questions, but we'll ask these kind of questions. Do you like examinations? No, but okay. But don't worry, you can hide behind the pillar, and I won't call on you. But I'll ask anyone who wants to answer to raise their hand. Okay. So this was a Bhagavad Gita verse, one of the first Bhagavad Gita verses that I learned, and a favorite of mine, he spoke in Bombay, 1973, so it was quite a while ago, in October. And this is the verse. Purusha prakriti sto hi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangasya sadasad joni janmasu. So what this means, Purusha means the person. Each and every one of us is a person. But this specifically means, Purusha means a male. a person who is intent on being the one who enjoys everything. Purusha, the soul, the person, he's situated, storm-situated prakriti within the material energy. He, certainly itself. Bhunkte, and Bhunkte means enjoying. He wants to enjoy the things of this world that we see, that we touch, that we feel. Whatever, he sees the world as if it's meant for his enjoyment. So that's Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan. He's trying to enjoy this world, in this world. Karanam, because of this mood, Guna Sangasya, it puts him in touch and in the control of the three modes of material nature from the Bhagavad Gita, goodness, passion, and ignorance. He's trying to enjoy by the very attempt, based on the mentality that this world is meant for me and my pleasure, that attempt captures him. Rather than enjoying and being filled with pleasure, he's caught. And the result, sarasad joni janmasu, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, on and on. So that's the very general meaning of it. And now here's the meaning from the Bhagavad Gita, the translation. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. And thus the result is that he meets with good and evil amongst various species of life. This is the Bhagavad Gita's description of each and every one of our situations. We're here very eager to squeeze some pleasure out of life based on the body that we have, and the result of that attempt is we are caught by the potent energy of the Lord, goodness, passion, ignorance, maya, Krishna's maya shakti, this energy of maya illusion. And then the result of that, birth after birth after birth after birth, various species of life. Okay, this is part one.
The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to the to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets the good and evil among various species of life. Purusha. Purusha means Sanjaya. The living entity. So that way I have already explained Purusha. Purusha means the enjoyer. And prakriti means enjoyer. So Purusha prakriti spoke. Prakriti spoke means this material world. The living entity, although part and parcel of God, spiritual entity, but he has come to this material world to enjoy. Anyone who is in this material world, his original cause of coming down from the spiritual platform to this material platform means he wanted to enjoy.
That was the first segment. Does anyone remember anything? Raise your hand if you remember something. Just raise your hand. Okay. Yes.
So,
Yes. Thank you. Anyone remember anything else? It's just like being in school again, isn't it? All that anxiety. Okay. Yes. Yes. And what's the cause? Yes. I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy. I want to. This world is meant for my pleasure. I am meant to enjoy. Now let's hear, we'll just read again what Prabhupada said. Purusha. Purusha means enjoyer, the living entity. That is the spirit. It is natural. In the spiritual world, in the material world, we want pleasure. So that day, another day Prabhupada must have been speaking, I've already explained Purusha. Purusha means the enjoyer. And Prakriti means that which is enjoyed. That's the material nature. So we look at the world, we look around as if it is meant for our pleasure. Its existence is meant for my pleasure. So Purusha Prakriti Stau. Prakriti Stau means this material world. The living entity, although part and parcel of God, spiritual entity, we are all eternal. But each and every one of us comes to this material world with a spirit to enjoy. Anyone who is in this material world, everyone, his original cause of coming down from the spiritual platform to this material platform means the reason we are here is we want to enjoy. So that's the first segment. Let's hear the second. Ready? Focus? Okay. Second is part two.
In the spiritual world, the only enjoyer is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All others are enjoyed. But here in this material world, everyone is trying to become the Supreme and others to be enjoyed. That everyone is trying to become God. And the last layer of Maya is that one is claiming that I am God. When he tries to become big businessman, big shamikar, big minister, big president, all in the society, big rich man, big with all. And when he fails to become all kinds of big, he wants to become one with God. And by mixing, by merging into God, he will be the biggest. That is the pure. So, basic principle is how to become big. Otherwise, because unless I become very big, I cannot enjoy.
Does anyone remember anything? This one's. There's one word that probably sticks out. Does anyone remember anything? Big and big and powerful and influential for the purpose of that giving me the ability to find pleasure, to enjoy. So in the we'll read to make it clear. In the spiritual world, on the spiritual platform, In the realm that we are all meant to live in, there is only one enjoyer. That's the Supreme Lord. Regardless of any religion or spiritual life, there is one center, actually. That is reality. All others, other than that one, are enjoyed. But here, not on the spiritual platform, but here, in this world, everyone, every single one is trying to become the supreme. We want to be the enjoyers. And looking at everyone else as if you, everyone else is meant for my pleasure. Everything, every person is meant for my pleasure. This is obviously not true. You can't convince anyone, what to speak of everyone, that they're meant for your pleasure. Everyone is thinking, no, you have it wrong. You're meant for my pleasure. That defines the material world and material life. And therefore, there is so much struggle. So everyone is trying to become God in the sense of everyone trying to be the center, imagining I am the center and everything is based on me. That's the general mentality. And the last trap, the last snare of illusion, Maya, is that thinking that I am the supreme, I am God. And there are so many spiritual paths. And this is what they teach, that ultimately you become one with the Supreme. You become everything. What Prabhupada is saying here, which the Bhagavad Gita says, and every spiritual religious path says, is no, stop trying to become the biggest, the greatest, the most powerful. Big businessman, because with being businessman, I can control so much. Or zamindar means literally landholder, jomidar, the holder of land. Or a big minister, everyone's trying to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Big rich man, big, but it's always big because that means power. And with power, I can control. And with controlling, and enjoy. No, this is the material world, but we are not meant for the material world. And when he fails to become big, all kinds of bigs, Prabhupada says, let's see, he wants to become one with God, and by mixing or merging into God, he will be the biggest. That is the philosophy of the material world. So the basic principle, Prabhupada gives a little summary here, is how to become big. Otherwise, because unless I become very big, I cannot enjoy. Part 3.
So, what is the appeal of this enjoying activities? This body that we have discussed. Jetra Khetra Vyam Idam Sariyam Jetra Vidya Vidya. This body is the field of activities. The Purusha, the living entities, has been entrapped by this material energy. That is called Purusha Pratitispo. He is not required to stay in this material world. But he has decided to enjoy this material world. Therefore, he is here.
So the cause of our difficulty is the spirit, a mood, a spirit of, I want to be the biggest, I want to be the enjoyer. Everything is meant for me. And soon, as we stop thinking like that, and put the supreme spiritual truth in the center, Krishna in the center, then everything shifts. So, Prabhupada, is the enjoying activities, what's the center of it? It's our body. And what life means is trying to squeeze as much pleasure as we can from our body. And then as soon as you have that mood, you look around and you see that other people have different bodies, and some of them have bodies that are more suitable for enjoyment than we have, and some have bodies that are less suitable for enjoyment. So when we see someone who has a body or a situation that's more suitable for pleasure than what we have, what emotion comes to our heart? Envy. Envy is compared to a spear in the heart. Can we be happy with a spear planted firmly in our heart? And if we see someone who has less capacity to enjoy than we do, what emotion comes to the consciousness? Yeah, okay. Pride. So envy and pride just bouncing back and forth between these very unpleasant emotions based on I want to enjoy, or based on my body, which is the essence of the field of my activities, the place on which my capacity to enjoy is based. So that attempt again, it traps us. It traps us in this world because the bars of this prison are our desires to enjoy. Therefore, because he has decided to enjoy this material world, let's see, there's a magic pointer somewhere. Because he has decided to enjoy this material world, therefore, he is here. Part four.
But he can give up. That is called liberty. That is called salvation. He can give up. Mukti. Mukti means that is also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vidya anatha rupam sarupena vastiti tantan mukti. Mukti is va anatha rupam. Here every living entity is situated anatha rupam. Anatha rupam means otherwise, which is not his nature. His nature is to serve, but he is staying here not as servant but as master.
Simple point. Does anyone remember it? Raise your hand if you remember the essence of what Prabhupada said. Yeah?
His nature is to serve.
His nature is to serve. But his mood is exactly opposite to his nature. His mood is to enjoy, but his nature is to serve. And liberation, sarupena avastita, anyat rupa, to become situated again, to give up the false mood that is in us and to be situated in our actual position, that is called liberation. Prabhupada is very straightforward always. That is called mukti. Let me just go a little quicker. We are staying here not as servant but as master.
So, purusha prakritistha is bhunte. Bhunte means enjoy. Prakritijan guna. He has come here to enjoy, but he is enjoying not the prakriti, but prakriti-jana-guna, but the qualities of the prakriti. There are three qualities of the prakriti: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Prakriti-jana-guna, these are products of material world. It is therefore described in another place. Dai Jesha Gunavai, Gunavai, Mamo Maya Dulaptaya. This illusory energy is, there are three qualities. qualitative. Some of them, therefore we find different types of species of life.
So there are some very interesting philosophical points in here, but it's sort of late at night for a lot of philosophy. But what Prabhupada is saying here very mysteriously is the soul in the body, he sees those things of the material world and he tries to enjoy them, but he actually doesn't ever touch them. Because he is spiritual energy and the material energy, the things of this world, are of a different quality, like oil and water do not mix. So he's trying to enjoy in this world, but he's just touching the, according to the qualities, the modes of material nature that he has, he sees one thing is enjoyable or another thing is enjoyable or another thing is enjoyable, but if you have a different mood, a different quality, you won't see those same things as enjoyable. Like some person really likes sweets and some person really doesn't like sweets. He likes salty things. Or some person likes, if you want to torture your child, you just bring him to a symphonic orchestra. And if you want to torture a person who likes Bach or Mozart or Tchaikovsky or some other Handel, bring him to a heavy metal rock concert. But one person is enjoying this, and another person is enjoying that, and one person likes sweets, and another person likes salty things, and one person likes to live in the city in a high skyrise, another person only likes to live in the country, some person likes to live by the ocean, another person likes this, another person likes this kind of clothes. You look around and you won't see two people dressed the same way. Different tastes, different modes of nature that affect us and cause us to like this or that or this or that and try to enjoy it. But we never actually are touching the thing that we like, what we're hoping to enjoy. We just touch these modes of material nature. It's an interplay of these modes of material nature. It's a subtle philosophical point. And therefore, it is so frustrating for the soul. It's like he sees the food that he wants to eat in the mirror, and he's trying to grab and taste that food, but he's only touching the mirror. So therefore, this world, it is frustrating. We want, we desire to enjoy. We desire, and the promises of the world of you get this, you buy that. The advertising is, you have these things and you will enjoy. But it is a bluff. It is a bluff. We never touch those objects, and therefore they cannot give us the pleasure that we, as eternal souls, are longing for. He's enjoying not the property, not the energy, but the qualities of the property, the modes of nature. So the soul is in a very frustrating and frustrated position. Prabhupada will continue here.
Every living entity has associated with a particular type of guna. There are three guna, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. And if you mix them up, then it becomes 9, 3 into 3 equal to 9. And again, if you mix up 9 into 9, then it becomes 81. Therefore, there are 8,400,000 species of life. Jalajanavarathanis, Kavala, 900,000 species in the water. Similarly, birds, bees, trees, insects, animals. Then we come to the human form of life. these different types of bodies are made for enjoying in a different state.
So these modes of material nature, each one of us has a different combination, like a color wheel. There are three primary colors. What are the three primary colors? Red, yellow, blue. And if you mix yellow and blue together, you get green. And if you throw in some yellow, you get yellowish green. But there are so many varieties of colors out of just these three. So similarly, each and every person and every different even animals, they are souls. Without, there is no life without the soul. Has anyone ever been present at the exact moment that of death for a person? Has anyone ever been present? Yes, yes. It is something very shocking. Because at one moment, there is perhaps an ill, a very sick body, person is there. And then in one moment, he's alive, he's ill, he's suffering. But in one moment, boom, just like that, that live, sick body turns into something that has nothing more life than this floor or this table. It is dead matter. I've seen it on more than one occasion. It is shocking. So in this world, well, in a body, the body that we have is this mixture, personal, individualized, custom-made mixture of modes of material nature, and that determines our likes and dislikes of how we wish to enjoy and what we find repulsive. It is these modes. Did you ever wonder why do I like that and why do I hate that? Why do I really want that and long for that? Why do I really have an aversion for something completely different? Why? I think that it is my choice, but in fact, I'm not choosing it. It's built into the body, the modes of material nature. So we are caught. We are caught by these modes. The soul gives life to the body, but it is caught. And what is the catching, the glue between these two is this: I have this desire to enjoy. And I'm caught. And rather than getting the enjoyment that I so desperately long for, I'm frustrated. And always thinking, oh, it's over there because this one has it and I don't have it. Envy. There is where my enjoyment is. So there's so many different species of life, and you can one sees this, that especially when one gets older, one laments the things that he didn't have in his life or her life, and then the mood comes, if only I had this, and if only I was taller, if only I was shorter, if only I had some hair on my head, if only I could sing, only if I could play the guitar, if only I could do this, if only I knew Sanskrit, if only I could play the harmonium, then I would have. So in this way, due to the frustrations of not being able to enjoy the way I had dreamed I would enjoy, my desires will carry me to another situation, another birth of frustration, of envy, of pride, of wanting something. But we're we're looking in the wrong realm. That's the essence of the issue. We're looking in the realm of Prakriti, thinking that we are the central figure, the enjoyer, when all we are is actually servants. And it's unavoidable. It's unavoidable. We try to be masters, we try to be enjoyers, but we end up serving anyway. And it goes on. Point seven. Oops. Let's see. Point seven.
Everyone is trying to eat, but he's enjoying, he's not enjoying the prakriti, but he's enjoying the association of the king living in the... Everyone is trying to eat, but he's enjoying, he's not enjoying the prakriti, but he's enjoying the association of the purusha. Purusha prakriti so. So every living entity is suffering or enjoying. There is no enjoyment. Everyone is suffering. But he, that is called Maya, he is suffering, but he takes it as enjoying. In the fog, the pig, he is eating stew. But he is thinking that he is enjoying. He is enjoying. He enjoys a certain type of food according to his quality.
So we each individuals have certain objects that we think are the objects of our pleasure. But really all that occurs is frustration and suffering, and what's one person's object according to his the modes of nature could be abominable to another person. I've seen it in Vrindavan that the hogs, the pigs there, they in the hot season they climb down into the sewers, and they think this is pig heaven. And then when they get out, does anyone know the first thing that they do when they get out of the... No one will admit to know. What do? They shake their bodies. And if you're walking down the street, and you immediately, because what's wonderful, what's heaven for him is hell for you. So this is just the play of the modes of material nature. And the eternal part of us that's meant for the highest pleasure, for the highest relationship, is degraded into such a position, is a pig in the sewer, and he's thinking this is the greatest. What a degradation for the eternal part of us. So in that sense, so much suffering. And he's taking it as enjoyment. Even the hog, the pig, he's eating stool, but he's thinking that he's enjoying it. Prabhupada is very graphic, isn't he? Very direct.
Nowadays, because people are becoming more and more in the modes of darkness, they are eating so many abominable things. And prakriti also, minimizing the supply of sattvic food.
Good.
And nowadays it has become scarcity of grain, of meat, of sugar, it is practical experience. Because people are becoming more and more in the modes of ignorance. Therefore, these foodstuffs are in the modes of goodness. Krishna does not say, give me meat and drinking wine. Krishna can eat everything. He is omnipotent. But he does not say, then give me anything and I will put. No. He specifically meant, patram bhutam phalam puyam yoni bhaktya apilishe. These things have a good start. In goodness, rice, dal, wheat, that is grains, then sugar, fruit, vegetables, milk products, these goods are in the goodness. Similarly, there are foods, very chilly, very hot, these are in the passion. And similarly, in ignorance also, there are very poor, stale food, meat, these are in the ignorance.
I've seen this in different parts of the world because I've traveled a lot in Asia, and sometimes one is shocked at what one sees in the stores. I mean, the stores, the restaurants sometimes look like zoos, and you see the tentacles of a squid or something like that. And one time when I was in Hong Kong, it was in a sort of a working class part of the city. I actually saw this man. He was trying to sell something. So he was some medicine, and he wanted to show that this medicine had made him powerful. So he was standing there, and I saw this with my own eyes. He was standing there. I couldn't understand what he was saying because he was speaking in Gontonghua, which means Cantonese language. But he was gathering a crowd around him. When the crowd was big enough, he put his hand in a box and he pulled out a cobra. And everyone was looking, and then he went, "Argh!" And he bit off its head. That's the mode of ignorance, by the way. Did you know that snake biles are very good for your eyesight? Yeah, I've seen this advertised. So, what we want to do, there are different modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. We want to avoid eating and living an ignorant lifestyle. We want to minimize the passion in our life, because the Bhagavad Gita explains the passion filled with so many desires, the result is distress. But we want to cultivate goodness, because the result of goodness is happiness. It's even-mindedness, it's peacefulness. But today, nowadays, the standard of living that society pushes upon us, the propaganda more or less, is consume, 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 more and more, desire more things, accumulate more and more and more and more. And if you have more than me, then I'm envious of you. And if you have less than me, all based on passion, which causes distress. So, along with the eating, there's a whole lifestyle that causes goodness to take birth in our consciousness. And one's tastes change. The way one wants to live and enjoy and what's attractive or repulsive, it changes as one develops different modes of material nature. So in Hong Kong, we used to, you know, there's an English expression, there must be a Hebrew equivalent of piggyback. Did you carry the children piggyback? Do you have something like that? Yeah. Well, in Hong Kong, I used to see how where that expression came from, is that they carry the dead pigs on their back by the arms. And one time, when I first went there, I was very idealistic and trying to show them the truth and the way to be. So I went out and took photographs of all the most horrible things that people were eating. And I was saying, just see how terrible it is. You know, there's blood coming from me. And I showed it to them. I said, well, what do you think? And one person said, I got hungry. And I got nauseous. So different mentalities cause different things to be attractive or repulsive. So we want to develop a clear consciousness of goodness, and so much of the lifestyle that we recommend is in the eating and the sleep, the cleanliness and everything, is how to live in a clean, good way. To live a good life is half the battle of elevating the consciousness. To live a life in goodness. So let's see how Prabhupada continues. So, and also it's interesting that Prabhupada was saying, and I was thinking about this, he was saying that the foods and goodness are becoming less and less available. So he talks about vegetables, he talks about milk, he talks about grains, and he talks about sugar and things like that. So I was thinking about this, and it's really true. Because you buy vegetable nowadays and you're not getting actual vegetables, you're getting GMO vegetables. And no one has any idea what the effect of these vegetables on the body in the long run are, and the grains and the wheat and things like that. And it's all run by these businesses. And what they did in India too, these big seed companies, Monsanto, Monsanto, and things like that. You know, they'll have the farmers. The villagers try their genetically modified seeds, and they'll find that they get more crop out of it. So, oh, this is very good. We'll make more money in this way. But the difficulty is that with the other seeds, you can get new seeds for planting the next year. And with these hybrid type of GMO seeds, you have to keep buying them every year and every year from the company. And then you have to use the artificial fertilizers, the petrochemical fertilizers. You have to spend money for that. And that depletes the earth. And ultimately it becomes desert. So it seems like you're winning with the modes of passion, ignorance, playing with them. You think you're enjoying, but the result is actually suffering. So, let's see what Prabhupada continues to say. I'm getting nearer to the end here. Part 9.
So, our business is human form of life. To get out of this cycle of birth and death and wandering in different species of life. This is the mission of human life. Human life advanced consciousness. It is made for getting out of this cycle of birth and death and wandering in different species of life. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Eyute Brahmanda Bhavite Kono Bhagavan Ji Guru Krishna Kripaya Paya Bhakti Ratami. In this way, the living entities are Purusha, Prakritistha, who in this material world is wandering in different species of life, in different planets. But the disease is birth and death. If we do take birth in the Brahma loop, Krishna says, Tārūpa bhūmanā lōkāna bhūmanā bhūmanā. If we do promote it to the Brahma loka, the highest planet, there is also death. You cannot have one. Janma Mitra Jarabari Dukkha Dushananda. That is their knowledge. That I don't want to die, but I am forced to die. I don't want to become old man, but I am forced to become old man. I don't want any disease, a disease is forced upon me. So this is the real problem. So Krishna says that Abramalogi, you may get any long duration of life, very comfortable life in higher planetary system. Just like people are engaged in doing pious activities. The result of pious activities is that you get your birth in a very good family, in a rich family, you get beauty, you become educated. Janma Shabda Sutta Sriyu. Janma means birth, high class birth. And Oishabda means opulence, riches. And Sutta means education. And Sri means beauty. So by pious activities, you can get all these things. And impious activities, the opposite number. In a family among the Pahojun, lower grade family, not very beautiful, not educated, suffering in so many ways. So either you get this life or that life, the Janma Mrityu Jarabhyadi is there. It is not that because you have got very beautiful body and born in very high class family and highly educated, you will avoid Janma Mrityu Jarabhyadi. That is not possible. The real problem is Janma Mrityu Jarabhyadi.
So Prabhupada is suggesting to us very strongly that don't try to adjust your position in the material world and get a better situation in the material world. He would often compare that to you're in a prison and you're a low-grade prisoner and trying to become a high-grade prisoner, where there's more facility for you, your cell is better, and this and that. No, human life is meant for getting out of prison. Bhunte prakriti janiha. Trying to squeeze pleasure where it's just actually not there. Sometimes you read in the newspaper that such and such a person died peacefully. But no one dies peacefully. It's painful. It's avoidable. I mean, it's non-avoidable, but it's something that everyone wants to avoid. So this, Prabhupada is pointing out, is the real problem that comes along, comes along with being in the material world, in a material body with a mood of I'm trying to enjoy. One is caught, and hope no one has nightmares tonight after this kind of a class. I should have told like happy light stories or something like that, but somehow or another this is what happened. I don't know. So this is the mission of human life. Let me get out my little red there. This is to get out of the prison. We're souls, we're eternal. We all have the experience already of not being the body. You remember being young Guna Avatar, young God. And you remember being, well, I won't start pointing accusative fingers at being young. But yes, and it was always me. So who is this me? What is the identity? What is my identity free from the body that's continuously changing and I'm experiencing as myself but isn't myself? Who is the life? Who am I? This is the purpose of life. So that's what Prabhupada is suggesting. That life has a true purpose, a real mission is to get out of the illusory pursuit of something that we'll never find the perfect situation in the material world. We're out of place here. We're eternal. This is the mission of human life, to get free. Otherwise, we'll think, oh, this is really... You see the people who do hang gliding or scuba diving or surfing. You know, these desires are so deep. This is what will make me happy. Just think, does anyone here surf? This, yes, there we have a surfer over there, okay. Prabhupada said this is... It's ecstasy, but for how long? So just imagine, I've seen in Australia, I've seen the dolphins surfing the waves, and they never have to come out of the water. Now that's a much better, if you really like to surf, you might, there's a better position for you, there's an opening for a new body, a dolphin body. Also, you like to hang glide? Okay, well, hawks, they're really good. Do you ever watch hawks up in the sky? Just for the slightest movement of their tails, they catch the air currents, and they never have to, like the poor pigeons and parrots, you know. But the hawks, I like hawks, by the way. I used to watch them. The slightest. So that brings us those kind of desires. Oh, next time you want to be able to sing wonderfully. Next time you want, what was it that you wanted again that you thought you didn't have in this life and that you were lamenting and you saw someone else had it and you wanted it? Oh, you want that? You think that will make you happy? And this, thus, round and round and round from one body to the next, based on what? Our desires. Our desires for what? Our desires to enjoy. And it is so rare that anyone has the desire to serve. But everyone ends up serving. We have our beautiful child thinking that we're going to enjoy them, and we do. But where does the enjoyment come from? It's from serving them. It's natural. Because that's us. That's who we actually are. So if you can solve, if you want pleasure, you have to solve the real problem. And the real problem is that I'm going to die and then take birth again, again, and again. Okay. Part 10, I think there's 11 parts.
Karanam guna sangayasya sadasam sadjani high class life and asamjani pabujani. So why one is born in low-grade family? Why one is born in high-grade family? Karanam guna sangayasya. The cause is as he has associated with divine kind of God. Unfortunately, this science that there is God after death and there is actually we have experienced the same, but they do not inquire. They think that one can improve. That is not possible unless he changes the quality. He cannot improve. That is not possible. They do not know it. They are falsely trying to improve the position. Nobody is trying to become poor, everyone is trying to become rich. But it is not possible because he has got a particular type of body. And that body is already destined and he has to achieve happiness or suffer distresses according to the body.
So according to our body, there's a certain amount of happiness that comes and a certain amount of suffering. So instead of making the mission of our life to achieve unending happiness on the material level, better to find out who we are and learn how to serve on the spiritual platform. And the last part.
absence.
My timings didn't do very well here.
He tried for that thing which he did not receive in your past life. Past life by our past activities and impast activities. We have got a type, different type of body here or in higher planetary system. That's all right. But that is not a solution of my problem. The real problem is Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi. So we should at the same time and utilize it how to get out of this Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi. That is the whole basic reason. Therefore, it is said, Tashaiva Hita Purati, which was determined. Then you should try, you should engage your life, how to get out of this cycle of birth and death. Suppose if one putrata lina should be the satta, we have to purify our existence so that we can revive our original position of eternal life, blissful life, full of knowledge. That is our requirement.
That is our requirement. That will satisfy us. It appears. Oops. Okay. Thank you. Now, usually the rule is philosophy in the morning and stories at night. But I broke the rule, and you have been very patient, and you have listened very attentively, and thank you very much. And even though I've already went over time and everything and went for a long, long, long time, you still thank you so much for being attentive. Are there any questions? Well, let me start on the other side. Did anything the Prabhupada say or was said, did it strike you as very meaningful for you as an individual? Just raise your hand if you would like to answer that question. Is there something that struck you as meaningful for you as a person that will actually touch you and perhaps shift your life some? Was there anything? Yes. Did you raise your hand? Yes. Yes.
I didn't think about it.
Yeah. It's the cause of frustration, isn't it? Because it's there in front of you, like the reflection of a wonderful pizza pie in the mirror. And it's there, you can almost smell it. But then when you try to get it, it's like touching glass only. So it's hollow. Thank you, thank you. Anyone else? Anyone who usually doesn't? Anyone in a brave mood? Or the alternative, does anyone remember anything? That one's easier, at least. Yes. Yes. And the illusion, the great hope that if I just shift externally, shift my externals, then I'm going to be happy. Always looking for external superficial changes when the real change has to be at the deepest level who we are, because that's so difficult to accept. So difficult to accept, we prefer superficial external changes which don't change anything. There's a saying that even if you go to the forest, you take your fate with you, or it follows you. Thank you. Anyone else remember something? Yes.
I have
with the Supreme. To make the, an internal change. Go from, I'm the enjoyer and everything is meant for me and my pleasure, and I don't like my situation now, so I have to change it superficially, externally. So make a very deep change from enjoyer to servant. Thank you. Anyone else remember something? Sawa, what do you remember? Even though you didn't raise your hand. Wait a second. What do you remember? Anyone remember anything? Okay, we'll use one of our teacher tricks. Does anyone remember anything? Please, someone remember something. Okay. Just the modes. If we're in goodness, we look for things of goodness and we enjoy goodness or passion or ignorance. And just try it one day. Say, from now on, I'm not going to try to enjoy life. I'm just trying to serve. It can't be just an intellectual adjustment. It can't be done like that. It has to be very, very, very deep. A real transformation of the heart. It's not a matter of just an intellectual adjustment. But it is wonderful. The more we move in that direction. Anyone else? Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Okay, you can ask a question.
Prabhupada was saying that you can't touch the material energy, but in one hand, you can say that the material energy is also God's energy. And we do say that, like prasadam, if we utilize things in the material nature
in the service of the spiritual,
so they become spiritual, so there is some kind of transformation. So how does it work?
If we view the material energy as if it is meant for my pleasure, as if its existence is meant for me, which is basically what makes the world work, that mood, then we don't touch the material energy, the modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, that we are under, causes us to touch those modes in something else, and causing us different type of experience. But it is based on that enjoying spirit. Now opposed to that, or in opposition to that, is a spirit, a mood that everything belongs to Krishna. That of course is easy to say and not so easy to do. But if one has love, like you don't have to convince the mothers in this room to make sacrifices and to think of them to take care of the children. It just comes so naturally once the relationship is there. So if we naturally cultivate our relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth, then naturally the serving mood comes to us. And naturally, proportionately to how deep was and sincere we are serving, then we are freed from the clutches of illusion. That's how it works. So the whole world, there's nothing wrong with the world. There's one Sanskrit verse, Vishwa Purna Sukhayate. The world can be an ecstatic place if we change our mood towards it, our vision of it. So the real change is an internal one that has to be made.
Is it from illusion to reality?
Yes. Because the illusion is, as Prabhupada said right in the beginning, that I'm the enjoyer, I'm God. I'm the central figure in existence. I'm the center. And the frustration of life is trying to convince the rest of the universe that I'm the center, because the universe refuses to cooperate, in case you haven't noticed. So that's illusion. But reality is, we always end up serving. If you become the head of the country, you have so many, the whole population you have to serve. Become the head of your householder, the household, you have to serve all your family members. If you become the boss, he has to serve all the people who are working for him. So that's reality. Illusion is that I'm the center, I'm the supreme. What do you think?
I was thinking that the illusion was, like you said, it's thinking of trying to, that I can enjoy the nature, material nature, but reality is actually material nature is meant for the enjoyment of
the supreme. Yes, and we try to use everything for his pleasure. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
Actually, two questions. If in the spiritual world there's only one enjoying, the rest of the beings are enjoying, are they still distinct, supreme pleasure or grief? And also,
okay, first one. So there's a term that we use, predominated enjoyer and predominating enjoyer, two terms. So an example is the leaf or the mouth is the natural organ that enjoys the food. If the fingers try to enjoy the food by itself, independently of the mouth, then they don't get the nourishment at all. You can put your fingers into the vegetables and the rice and for as long as you want, but no nourishment will come to either the fingers or the rest of the body, because there's an artificial attempt to be the enjoyer. But when the fingers act in the natural way and put the food in the mouth, then naturally the nourishment comes to the fingers too. So similarly, the souls in service to God by pleasing the Supreme Absolute Truth, they naturally achieve a platform of bliss that is when like a servant in the king's house is living in the king's house, so he gets those facilities. Did I answer your question? Yeah. So there's a natural way to be blissful and an unnatural way to attempt to be blissful that causes misery. Thinking myself as the central figure, as the enjoyer, causes misery. Serving the Supreme, who is actually the center, that brings bliss to me, is me too, because that's natural. Okay? And question number two.
So where does all those pushas who want to become the enjoyer are coming from? Why are we always trying to go against our natural way?
That's a good question. It's like asking, why are the prisons always full? It's because we have free will. Because we have made an unfortunate choice at some time, at some point, and that we, with free will, we've turned our back, and with some enmity in our consciousness. And what we have to do now is turn in towards the Supreme again. Prabhupada did say that, didn't he? On the spiritual platform, he said, yes.
Then we just turned our back.
Because, yes. there's no point in time in one sense that happened, but there is some turning of the back on our natural relationship with the Supreme. And now what's required is to, again, to turn in the right way. There's a Bengali phrase, Krishna bhule se jeev anadi bahi mukh ate eva maya tare samsare radu. That bhule se, forgetting Krishna, bahi mukh means literally turning your back. And then the result of that is not the happiness that we imagine, but rather it's samsare radu, just like we've been hearing the miseries of repeated birth and death. So then the question could be asked, why do we turn our back? And the only answer to this very difficult question is because we have free will, and some do and some don't. Why does one person break the law and end up in prison, and another person obeys the law? There is an element of free will, which means we have to take responsibility for our current situation. Is that all right? But it leads, because these are very deep type of existential questions, so at other times you can ask other devotees or myself. Okay, I think we should. Okay, yes, the question has arisen from Soa. Thank you. And then we will end and we'll take prasadam. One more after the one more. Okay. Is it from you? Oh, from Rama. Oh, okay. You can be the last one to ask the question. Okay, Rama? Okay.
Even when we practice spiritual process, try to practice spiritual process in the heart, there's still deep in the heart, there's still the desire to do it.
Yeah. This is a practical, realistic question. What can we do if when we're trying to turn towards Krishna with spiritual practice, we find that within our heart there are tendencies to enjoy? Yes, that's the question. So the first thing is that we become humble. It's humiliating. We become humble, but humble doesn't mean feel bad about yourself. Humble means that one accepts one's insignificance and one's insincerity, and then takes deeper shelter of the Supreme, depending more on grace and mercy than one's own ability. It's like if you have just imagine a teenager's room that hasn't been cleaned for 2,000 years. A 2,000-year-old teenager hasn't cleaned their room. And then you walk into the room, or they decide they become 20 years old, and they say, "Now I'm going to clean my room." And you open it up, and and when you turn on the light, it's even more shocking. So when we turn the light on our consciousness with some introspection by trying to sincerely move forward, the first thing we see is our insincerity, practically speaking. So that causes us to be humble, which is the essence of the process, in fact. No insult to any teenagers who happen to be present, by the way. Is that okay? So don't give up. This room is so dirty that I'm just going to close the door and maybe it will magically get cleaned in that way. Yes, Rama, what is your question?
We didn't have a question. We wanted to say what we remember from the lecture.
Okay. What do we remember from the lecture? you have to be the spokesperson.
To remember that everyone wants to be God.
That's heavy. What does that mean? You can help. What does that mean that we want to become God? What does that mean?
We had a big discussion about it during the lecture. And they said, they argued that not everybody wants to be God, because some people, the scientists for example, they don't want to be God, they don't care about God.
But what do they want? They don't literally want to be God, but they want to be the center. They want to understand reality by their own power, by their own intelligence. They want to understand everything. They want to act as if they are central, the center of everything, like everyone else. But who asked that question? Was that these two? Yeah, listening very carefully. Not in their mood of scientist, they don't want to be God, but in their mood of just going about life, they're thinking that everything centers around them, just like everyone else thinks everything centers around them. Think about it, that we all sort of walk around in this personal bubble of our consciousness, of our thoughts. So living in this bubble, and we interact with other people's bubbles, but in your bubble, who is the star? Huh? Here I am. That's the central figure. In the spiritual world, each and every person thinks of Krishna as the center. That's what the spiritual world is like. And in one sense, you could say the curse of material world is we turn our back on Krishna. We want to be the center, but we're not. We're only little insignificant souls. So we get what we want. We get this illusory universe where we're the center. That's what we wanted. And then we're just bumping into everyone else who has this illusory false concept that they're the center. And sometimes I think like the first 5 years of marriage are the most difficult. Because if it's not the sixth year and the seventh, first 7 years or 10 years, why is it? Because I have this dream of what marriage is going to be. And in my dream, I'm the center, and your purpose is to fulfill my desires in my imaginary little bubble. And then, so I have this, and my wife has this a dream, but it's just the opposite, that she's the center. And then there's the collision of illusions, and that's called fighting. Whose position is it to fulfill the other person's desires? And then when the child comes along, the fight is over, because the child is, everyone has to fulfill the desires of the child, otherwise the child doesn't survive. That too. So a solution to these kind of problems is that we accept humbly that none of us are the center. Although we still are living in this illusory bubble, but we have to realize that it's just an illusion. It's not actually reality. I'm not the center of existence. If I asked you the question now that everyone who thinks they're the center of existence, actually the center, raise your hand. Now, no one would raise the hand and say, yes, I actually believe I'm the center of existence. No one, because it would appear so foolish. But yet, that's what we do all day long. When I miss the bus, I come a little late, I get angry because this isn't supposed to happen in my illusory world. Everything's supposed to line up just the way I want. It's illusion. The universe refuses to cooperate. And it teaches us, continuously teaches us, that we're not the center of existence. Sometimes younger devotees, they ask me, I feel proud. How can I become humble? And I say, just be patient, don't worry. Okay. Yes.
I still thinking about the snake.
Yeah.
But we're hungry. I have another one. How can we? How can we realize in a more deep way?
In a life transforming way. This is probably not the best last question when everyone wants to eat. But maybe take prasadam. What's the alternative?
It's a visual alternative, and it's something that is... Tangible.
Okay. I would say that we were talking, Guna Abhitapabhu and I were having a conversation about this. We were playing a little bit. But there was one, and I'll end here. There's one devotee of one great teacher, Ramanujacharya, who said, how can I increase, he asked his teacher, how can I increase my faith that there's actually a God and that he's going to take care of me? And Ramanujacharya just said, walk south for 6 days and come back. That was all he said. So the student, being trusting and wanting to experience. So he walked south for 6 days. And on he stopped at some place at night, and there was a place for him to sleep, and someone fed him. And then the sun rose the next morning, and he walked second day, and he found water, he found food, he found a place to sleep. It sort of just came to him. And for third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day. And by the after 6 days, he came back and said, yes. He saw he was being cared for. So, of course, one can argue with these, but what I'll say right now is, are you making your body, are you breathing consciously now? Saying, no, I have to breathe in, now I have to breathe out. And at the same time, I have to make my heart beat. And at the same time, I have to make sure I blink my eyes every once in a while. Just imagine. But it's happening. We take it all for granted. The air is coming. The water is coming. Everything is coming. Now, how is it coming? Who has organized this? If you ever look, we have several doctors here. If you ever, we don't recommend you do this, but peel away the skin on your body and look at the way that the muscles work. The simplest movement of my hand is so complicated from the muscular point of view. What to speak of from the energetic point of view, or the putting the oxygen in there. But just from the everything is balancing each other. And all I do is think, right hand raise into the air, and it goes. Now, what's the connection between my thinking and the moving? So I'm thinking, I'm doing it all, And then there's the balancing of the muscles. It's so complicated to do this simple thing that I'm doing here. Now, how did this all come about? Did you ever see anything complicated come about without intelligence behind it? I mean, these are arguments that you know people will fight about and everything, but they're very common sense, really. There's nothing that gets organized in anyone's experience that gets organized without intelligence, and not only intelligence, power. Like I've seen it in India, that they have in the trains, they have all these rules. So much intelligence came to follow the rules, but no one follows them because there's no power to push them to follow them. To create the rules is one thing, but you need... So to create this order, but then to enforce it, it takes intelligence to create it, power to enforce it. The sun is rising. Everything is happening by chance. Very unlikely, I would say. Very unlikely. So, but these type of intellectual arguments don't convince the heart and don't remove doubts. So therefore, travel south. Go to Vrindavan.
In Israel, it won't work.
And neither will traveling north either. Yeah, it's true. Go to Vrindavan. I mean, I could everyone who has their favorite little stories individually of why they actually trust and believe and have more faith. If you ask someone like Avram, who's sitting here, they'll say, I don't know, but I'm here. But everyone has their... What is it? What is it that shifts in the heart? Prasadam. Eat more prasadam, which is what we should do right now. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. And thank you all so much. It's so late and still you listen to philosophy. Very nice. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Gopal, you sat the whole time. So I'm always amazed. You know what I've discovered about one difference between adults and really young children is that when children are young and they're not paying attention, they start moving all around. But when you're older, you learn how to not pay attention without moving. Your mind can go everywhere, but you don't... sit there like that. So, but don't worry about that. Do you remember anything? What?
Everybody is different.